Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing today, Miss Lakia?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Hanging in there like the rest of us, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's what we say. We say we're doing good, we're doing great, but but we just live in day by day.
Listen, that right now that's all we that's the only thing we can do, but I appreciate you coming on today, and I'm not gonna hold you too long because I know you got I'm pretty sure you got a lot to do today.
I appreciate this opportunity really to be on Melanin Dads because I think what you're trying to do, this movement that you're creating, is so important, especially now. Especially now.
Yes, and to all my viewers that are going to be listening to this, I'm not going to wait to put this out like I usually do. I'm going to put this out ASAP because it's something that we all need to hear, and it's something that it just needs to be heard.
I don't know what I was getting echo, so I just took the headphones out. Can you still hear me?
Yep, I can hear you good.
Matter of fact, let me send you another link.
Okay.
I'm gonna send you another link.
Leave this one.
Yeah, I'm gonna send you a new one because some reason you're not, it's not on speaker or nothing like that. So I'm gonna send you another one.
Okay.
All right. Hello?
Yes.
All right, you sound amazing now.
Great. Okay.
All right, so yeah, just threw off my whole train. No, I was just saying, like, usually I do my episodes like weekly, to kind of spread them out, but I feel like this episode needs to be put out ASAP because right now, especially with everything we're going through, it needs to be heard.
Yes.
And especially, we need to get the voices in from our Black queens on this as well. Just not hearing from the brothers, but hearing from somebody who actually specializes in this area and who's actually because at the end of the day, even though that you're a professional, you still have your own journeys that you have to go through as a Black person, as a Black woman, as a mother,
Yes.
as somebody as a somebody's partner, you have your own journey that you have to go through. So I really appreciate you being on this episode today. And I'm gonna get started if that's okay with you.
Oh, yes, right.
Because I want you, I'm gonna get back to work and I'm gonna let you enjoy the rest of your day for what it's worth today. So
No, this is so important to me. This topic, your mission is so important. So I'm glad to take time out to do this for you.
I really appreciate it. It does mean a lot. And to all my viewers out there, thank you for joining us on another episode of Melanin Dads. I have a special guest with me today, Ms. Lakia. And can you just tell my viewers a little bit of your background?
Yes. Well, my name is Lakia Natasha Thornton. I go by Lakia Natasha on social media. I am a licensed clinical social worker and a mental health clinician. So what I do is I do individual and couples counseling for people who are struggling with any life transitions. And I also do crisis management. My background is prison work, family-based practice, outpatient, and residential. So I've been and seen so much of so many different demographics, but my heart and soul is for my people, the Black people of America. I don't call myself African American anymore, but for Black people, men and women who really struggling mentally, and not able to have outlet. So that is my new mission and my plan to really normalize mental health treatment for faith-based communities. We can't just pray about it. And also communities of color. We can't just keep everything in our house.
Correct. And what made me reach out to you, you had posted something as far as just bringing awareness and telling you know, our women that they need to check on their men. There's a struggle. And I think when I started realizing that I need to get help myself and start that journey, I already knew and I felt as though it was a it was something that was already frowned upon in our community. And you know, that's why I started my journey so late in life, you know, like a lot of us have, you know. So I kind of wanted to start with some questions just to see you know, what you were thinking and stuff like that.
Sure.
So first, you know, by your post, you know, why do you feel like it is so many of our Black men who are not getting mental health, you know, treatment?
Well, just like you said, it's such a stigma around it. We are taught very early. I know I was taught very early what happens in our house, stay in our house. We are taught that therapists and psychologists or psychiatrists, that's a white people thing. That's a white people thing. I heard that so many times. That's acting white. If you see anything, you pray about it. You talk to your friends. You talk to your family. And you're supposed to be strong enough to let things go. And I think that's the big thing, especially for the Black man, because, I mean, literally, you guys have a target on your back. Every angle, you're being attacked by every system. And then you come home, and you may not be getting that validation that you need. So you don't know where to go. Like, where is your sanctuary? Where is your safe space? So I posted that because I had a grown man, like, you'll think, like, straight hood, like, you know, when you think about, like, hood guys in Philly, that's what this guy was. Big beard, everything. And he was crying in my first session with him. And he was just like, I just need someone to listen to me. And it just hit my heart, like, how many of these really tough guys, we walking down the street and we're like supposed to be scared of them, or we intimidated by them, or you think, oh, they hood or they street or whatever, but they really got a lot of brokenness. They just ready for someone to uncover with them.
Let's see. So if I put this particular episode out, this would be technically episode 16. So as you could tell, I've done a lot of episodes so far, and 95% of them have been, you know, Black men who, you know, told me things that they were going through, you know, in their lives that, you know, if we weren't having that type of conversation or young, you know, in our earlier days of being friends, whatever case may be, we weren't talking about, you know, the mental health.
Yeah.
You know, now it's such a big thing that, you know, we have to normalize it. We have to confide in our circles that it's okay to go get help.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing you said to me earlier was that, you know, you're a clinical, you know, in a nutshell therapist, but you do it for, you know, for Black people.
Yes.
And I think that's huge, because a lot of things that I've read upon and reports, and, you know, dissecting a lot of things before I decided to, you know, to take this platform, was that a lot of us aren't getting it because, you know, we don't have somebody that we can look at and see, hey, they know what I'm going through, you know? So that's huge. Off the bat, you're doing it for our people, which then entrusts them, because they're like, okay, this is somebody who looks like me. Mm-hmm. This is a Black woman. Okay, I could talk to her about my issues, and it's not going to be, you know, looked upon because they're white or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very important. I mean, representation in every genre is important. You know, representation, and now this podcast movement is important, so we can hear our brothers and our sisters' voices and what we think about in the music industry, in education, in the criminal justice system, in mental health, in medical care. We need to be in every area because we know what's best for us. And I truly, truly believe that.
No, I totally agree with you. And I had, you know, just an example. And I had like my son had an issue in school, and I had mentioned to his mom, I said, we should have him go speak to somebody, like a therapist. especially he deals a lot with my mom passing and stuff like that. And, you know, her response to me was like, he don't need that. And I said to her, well, I started going to see somebody and it's really helped me be a better person. I feel like it's going to help him. Mm-hmm. And her response was just like you, how you said, like our households aren't built like that. Mm-hmm. They're not made to, you know, help us prosper mental wise, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very true. And it's scary because when you think about just what narrative she was taught over her life, mm-hmm. of like, if you share things, maybe we heard fear, like all therapists want to take our children away. Or if you tell what mm-hmm. really goes on in your house, they're going to take you from me. Like, I heard these narratives when I was very young. And most of us mm-hmm. have heard that, like, that social workers are bad. We just break up families, when most social workers do not work in child protective services. And that therapy is bad because then you talk about things that's in the house. But kids have feelings. Kids have thoughts. And especially our Black young boys, they really need to know now that it's okay to feel certain ways before they get right. old and their feelings become now a threat to someone else.
Or it's harder for them to break those habits. And you know, because it's like I have issues and stuff like that. I'm like, wow, okay, this is something that was easy. Why couldn't I just do it this way? And, you know, you tend to beat yourself up, you know, mm-hmm. until you start finding out why you're saying those things or doing those things. And it's not an excuse, but it's more so an enlightenment for you to be better, you know?
Definitely. I mean, we can't blame ourselves for things that we don't know, right? And I tell people that all the time, because another reason, to go back to your original question, another reason to keep people from not going to therapy is they feel like they waited too long. Mm-hmm. So I say to those people that it's never too late. As long as we wake up the next day, we got a new day to do something a little bit different. And it doesn't matter if you never knew something before, or you never did something before, or you never behaved or had a certain attitude or thought or enlightenment before. Today, you can say, I'm going to choose me. I'm going to choose healing. I'm going to choose breaking generational curses and cycles. Wow. You know, I'm going to choose that today. And it don't matter if yesterday you was doing whatever, whatever. Today, you're a different person. Today, you chose to do something different. And we shouldn't hold other people accountable for their choices in the past if they're making positive choices now. And we shouldn't do that to ourselves too, because I think we're harder on ourselves than anyone else.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned generational curses, and that played in a huge reason for me starting this podcast, because I learned through, you know, the journey that I'm still going through, that I had a lot of generational curses that, you know, my parents put on me, that I didn't realize that I was seeping into my children, and I had to learn how to break those so that they can just be normal functioning, you know, Americans, you know, and not have to, okay, now I'm 25, I'm 30, and I'm doing so much, you know, self-sabotage that I don't know that I'm doing it. I want them to be able to fight with both hands up, and, you know, not have to go into a dark room with, you know, with the lights off, and they have better options than we did as kids, you know?
Yes. Yes.
You know, so I feel like that's what plays in us doing so much for our kids and giving them all the things that we didn't have, you know, so now I know you have children yourself. How have your talks been with your kids?
Oh, it's been difficult, especially this year. I feel like I've been really transparent with my kids through just how life is set up. Injustices are there, and inequality, but also like that generational curses thing. I had to be very transparent to my kids about abuse and mistreatment and poverty and gun violence and all that, because, you know, I grew up in the Project Southwest Philly, first North Philly, Raymond Rosen, and then South Philly, Patrick Projects, and went through all throughout Philly. So I've seen a whole lot of stuff, and my family been through a whole lot of stuff. So I felt like it was better for me as they got older to tell them my truth and tell them what I've been through, not so they can look down on anyone or anybody in my family. It was so they know that there are other options, even if you grow up in an impoverished society, even if the whole world says, you know, you're Black, so you got to take less, that you don't have to accept that as your narrative. Now, 2020, that conversation has quickly changed to like, oh my goodness, we have to be careful. Like, you, my son, is you, your people are going to be threatened by you. First, you were cute little boy. Now you're tall, you're 6 foot, you know, you're vocal. People are going to think you're aggressive. And it's a shame, but I have to teach him how to lower his voice. You know, we had that all conversation about, you know, the talk about what to do if you're stopped by a police officer, and just conversations that other colors, races don't have to deal with. And I think we are minimized or made to feel guilty to have these conversations with our kids, but we have to try to keep them safe. You and I both know what happened in Philly on Monday. I seen the video and I just was enraged. I was just like, if that was my son, they would have had to kill me too. And I just can't imagine, but that's what a Black man in America has to worry about every single day. And because of that, then Black moms also have to worry about that. Black dads have to worry about that. If you got something, you have all these beautiful sons and your beautiful daughter. So you're going to, as they grow up, the conversation is quickly shifting from what our parents used to tell us about cops. Like, go to a cop if you need help. You know, if you're lost, find your nearest police officer. Like, those are not the conversations we're having with our kids in 2020. We're like, at all costs, try not to call them. And it shouldn't be that way, but we have to take it for whatever it is right now. And what we're hearing right now is that they are not for us. So we have to protect ourselves.
Correct. And yeah, the thing was that I was at work on Monday when it happened. And, you know, it, where I'm at, the part of the city I'm at, that was a couple blocks from me. So I'm right off of 73rd and Ceylon Avenue. So that really wasn't that far from, you know, where I'm at. And, you know, my sons weren't home. They were with their moms, and I called them and to check up on them and tell them I love them and stuff like that. Cause I don't know, might be the last time I talk to them. Who knows? Yeah. You know, that's the kind of fear that we're living in now. Like, that this might be our last day, and people say, "Oh, well, you're overreacting." No, it's literally something that goes off in our head that puts us in survival mode. And you know, you hear people dying every day. You know, giving their flowers while they're here. Yeah. You know, all those things. So those things in our head when we have to, you know, think about how our kids are, you know, going to. You know, luckily I have kids who don't like going outside. So I don't have that fear of this might be the last time I see them because they want to go outside and play with their friends, or a stray bully hits them, or, you know, they get picked up from the cops. Like, even though I have conversations with them, I tell them, like, you know, because you guys have darker complexions, you have to worry about those. And, you know, I might not get pulled over as much as you because I wear glasses and lighter skin than you. And I'm a certain way, but they might do you. It's like those unnecessary conversations, but we have to have them because if something happens, the first thing in my head is like, wow, I didn't have that talk.
Exactly.
You know, unfortunately that's the world we live in. And, you know, it's just, it's very sad. And, what's going on with the city.
Yeah.
With the country overall, you know, so I know you're big right now on self-betrayal. And you know, self-doubt and, you know, self-sabotage and stuff like that. So for someone who may not be starting their mental health journey like some of us are, because, you know, mine frankly started, I took it kind of serious when I first got married. I started doing couples therapy, but I knew mentally I wasn't ready to fully, you know, engage it like I should. I was like, you know, my wife said, hey, you need to go and speak to somebody because you have so much anger. And, you know, especially my mom being killed and stuff like that. I had so much anger. And then I still got to be a dad. I still got to be a husband, a coworker, a friend, a son. To everybody else, it gets very, very frustrating. You have no choice but to hit a wall, like literally punch a wall to get your anger out. And, you know, so, you know, anybody who is on the fence about going to get some, you know, to go see somebody or speak with somebody, you know, I'm not sure if you're taking clients, but, you know, I know you personally outside of, you know, your profession. And I know that you're somebody who, you know, when you're talking to somebody, it's on the same level as though we're the same person. And I think that's huge on being very transparent with who just wants somebody to relate to. You know, I feel like that's the biggest key to be a, I've never been a therapist, but I know when I look for a therapist or somebody to talk, I just want them to relate to how I feel. Like that breaks down the walls easier.
It's so crucial. I mean, you said, number one, you said so many good nuggets in there. And I just want to applaud you for just this journey that you decided to go on to hold yourself more accountable to yourself, to your wife, to your children, and to the community around you and everyone who's attached to you, because it starts with us looking within ourselves, you know? So the fact that you are able to be transparent in that way, of course, your freedom is going to unlock freedom of everyone around you, because you're going to interact with the world differently. And that's the benefit of therapy. I was also like a very angry person, which you would not even think now because I did a lot of therapy work from when I was younger. But my father was also murdered. He actually died on my 5th birthday. So every time my birthday comes around, I'm thinking like, whoa, what if he was here? What would that be like? Like, to look at his headstone and see my birthday as the day he died is just like, it hits me every time. But because of that,
it still does.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I'm not saying wow like a bad thing, but just wow, like it's so much that we have to hold.
Yeah, you know, to lose your parent. And I'm not saying like old, you know, pass away, we're old, and then you know that's when your parents, you think that's how it's supposed to happen. But to lose a parent when you're young, when you're still growing, you know, you just now like started your family, you know, and your mom can't be a part of that, that will make you angry. And I think the world says, get over it, get over it, get over it. Well, look at this part of your life is good, look at that. And not acknowledge that it still hurts, and it's going to hurt, and it will continue to hurt. But what I challenge people, and I literally just had this conversation with one of my clients last night. We have to embrace the negative things in our life and process them and hold a space for them. Because if we don't, we're not able to appreciate all the great things that's happening in our life. So what it's saying is that you have to equally give time and space for the things that hurt you and the things that are really great for you. And if you don't deal with the things that hurt you, you're not really present on the things that's really good in your life right now. And you see that with people, like you said, like struggling with like how to deal with your anger and maybe punch a wall or do something like that. It's because you're not allowing yourself to feel sad. It's easier to feel angry than to feel sad. But if we teach our young boys and our grown men that it's okay to feel sad and there's no time limit on grief, then you'll have a lot less angry people walking around in the world. So the second part of which you said about, am I taking new clients? I always take new clients. If I have like a wait list going, I always try to refer them out to other clinicians of color, because I do have a good network system. If anyone wants to, you know, they can inbox me if they don't know me directly. But because of just ethical principles, if you know me and you're personally my friend outside of Facebook, then I can't be your therapist, but I can set you up with someone that I know that's really good for you. So I do that all the time, give people referrals. People can go on my social media, which is Lakia Natasha on Instagram or on Facebook, but they also can go to my website. And if you don't mind, I could tell you what the website is.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes.
When I put this out, it'll be attached to the awesome post, you know, this new.
Awesome. Okay. So it's www.transitionsforlife.com. So it's transitions4life.com. And it's called that because everyone goes through life transitions. And we have to acknowledge that life has ups and downs and stressors and good times and bad times. And it's okay to have support, emotionally support, from a mental health professional during those times. So right now I have a lot of like couples worried whether they should get married or not. I have people who are in the middle of getting a divorce. I have people looking to change their jobs and their careers and they're a little nervous. So I have clients and all kinds of scenarios, but all of them are in some kind of life transition. And that's what my expertise is.
That's so important. 'Cause even if I can't go to you, being able to be referred to someone else that you have a close network with is going to be the same thing as doing with you, because I know that you vouch for that person. And, it starts with having that trust with that person. 'Cause when I started mine, the person I had, I wasn't really feeling to begin with, but then I wasn't answering the questions that that person was asking, you know? So it was mainly me, my fear over what they were asking me to be over, you know? And the biggest thing that sticks with me and still does is, and has helped me get through a lot of stressors and a lot of, you know, pain points that I've gone through that would normally, you know, I would hit that wall and my anxiety or whatever would kick in and I don't want to do nothing after that. And that my therapist had told me that, you know, at the end of the day, like every time I would tell him a situation, he'd be like, okay, that's fine, Julian, but what did you do in that situation? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he like, look, at the end of the day, you can't control how somebody feels or their outcome, or if they're on the same page as where you're at and you want to give them the answer that you would like somebody else to give you, they might not give you that same respect, you know? So at every single situation, you have to think about what have you done in that situation to make it better. And then you can get your result from there and make you feel better. And I was like, I'm gonna try it. And then every time I'll be like, wow, okay. I'm not angry about that situation, even if it didn't go the way I thought it should go, you know?
Yes, so true. We only can control ourselves. And anxiety comes when we're trying to control things that's outside of ourselves, or we worried about the outcome that we can't personally control, which is most. 90% of our life is not really in our control. It's really how we respond to the things that happen to us. It's really going to dictate whether it's going to be successful or not. But it doesn't mean that we can put our best efforts and life happens. Tragedies happen. People pass away. You know, jobs get lost, and we can do everything right. So I think that's what people really struggle with, mental health, because it's like, I did everything. So why is this happening? So I'm going to buckle down and be more hard on myself, more hard on my kids, more hard on my wife or husband, more hard on family because things didn't work out my way, versus saying like, okay, this is another example where I have to relinquish and surrender my will for the greater will, what's best for me. And whatever that means to you, because everybody has their own faith you know, faith-based beliefs, but you definitely have to right. surrender that to receive what you're supposed to have. Because doors close because your door is opening over there, but you're so angry at this door closing, you're not seeing the other doors is opening for you. So especially with our people, we have to be mindful of that because so many doors close on us just because of the color of our skin. And like you said to your sons, which I thought was so beautiful, is that you said, well, your color, because you're darker than me, you might have a different Black experience than me. And I had to do that same thing mm-hmm. for my kids too, because each one of them are a different color. But so my conversations right. with my oldest daughter is much different because she's so midnight Black. And then my youngest daughter is so light. My conversation with her is much different. Like, every Black person is beautiful because she just loves her light skin. And I don't want her to get the impression that other colors are not really beautiful too. So I get all of how complex it is to be a Black dad or a Black mom, especially now. And I think you're doing the work. And if people are listening to you, they either are doing the work or they are wanting to do the work. And that's a good thing to be.
Yeah, I wasn't big on podcast, even though I feel like if I did start this, you know, years ago, it'd probably be a bigger platform because the podcast platform is very oversaturated now, but it's not oversaturated mm-hmm. in our community. You know, a lot of people aren't listening to podcasts. They're not listening to other people's voices that sound like them. And I wasn't big on that as well. Just like if you look at superheroes, all our superheroes mm-hmm. growing up are white. Our first superhero wasn't until we got Chadwick mm-hmm. and he was Black Panther. You know, so it's time for us to get in, you know, platforms like, you know, like therapy, which wasn't, you know, hasn't been a big thing for us, but the representation is what's going to change the way we feel about it. Like, my representation is going to be this podcast, which is going to make more people want to listen and get help to make them go and see somebody that's going to help them get past their anger and their frustration. And I had did a interview, like a Instagram live with, you know, another young lady that I know who's a, I forgot her actual title, but she had, like, you know, people asking questions and answers. And somebody asked me, like, why, you know, why black men, you know, don't show emotion and they don't cry and stuff like that. And, you know, before I answer, I wanted to get kind of what you thought about, because I know as you being a Black woman, I'm pretty sure you dealt with a lot of Black men in your life. Can you give some type of input on why maybe you've seen that, you know, the people you've been with, or, you know, family members or friends that you know, that are very reluctant to express themselves to their, you know, Black women or to their mm-hmm. to just people, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's so important. I think that the misrepresentation of the Black man starts, you know, before slavery, and definitely with slavery, because we're, you know, meant to look at like animals, like heartless. And that's just the culture to say, oh, they don't have feelings. They're, you know, they're just workers. And that's not true. Oftentimes, the men themselves believe that about themselves, and then shut down the world around them just to cope, really, just to survive. Because I can't imagine, like, I know how difficult it is to me as a Black woman in this world. I can't imagine being a Black man and the pressures that's under. But I find the men that I had in my life, they were afraid to be vulnerable. And sometimes you can get a queen, you know, that can put up with it, I think, and be like, help you through it. But if you don't want to go through it, mm-hmm. I think she's going to be left feeling lonely and mm-hmm. open to, you know, other people trying to talk to her or to woo her. Mm-hmm. And I think Black men need to understand that a little bit more. If you have someone that's nagging you or trying to get more time with you or trying to hear your heart, it's not because she wants to make your life hard. It's because she really wants to get in your heart, and we know it's layers to get to a Black man's heart, to any person really, but especially for a Black man, because you are told that you're not supposed to do those things because you're not hard, you're not strong if you do. So I think for me, that no matter what, that I'm always more gracious, I think, and give more opportunities to Black men. But I also been very much hurt because they didn't recognize how broken they were, even if I tried. So I would challenge people to say to always be open to have those conversations with them. But if you have a man that's not ready yet to really do that work, don't take it personal. It's not about you. It's where they are. And they just need more time. And maybe when they get ready, you might not be the girl for them. You know, maybe they find someone else. And I think that's the struggle with a lot of women, especially that I know, could be like, oh my God, I was with him all this time and he wasn't ready to come in and he wasn't ready to do this and this and that. And now he's with someone else and he's like ready to get married and have a family and be responsible. It was like, hold on, that's growth. That wasn't his season with you, you know? And I think that goes both ways.
Right. And just to piggyback off of that, it was funny that you had brought all this up because one of my friends, he knows somebody that I used to deal with. And he was like trying to like let everybody know about my podcast. So he sent like a bunch of text messages out. And the person said, I'm so happy that Julian started to take this journey. Even if it wasn't with me, you know. And I always tell people, they're like, well, what made you start? And it was my wife that really pushed me because she was going through that journey. She's been going through it for a long time prior to me even showing up. But it was a conversation we had, and, you know, she said that, you know, you got a daughter now, and she's going to look at you to be her first love and show her what it is to be, you know, what a man should be, you know, and none of us know what a man should be, you know. I don't even know what a man should be, you know. So, I feel like whatever journey you do take and whatever positivity comes out of it, I feel like that's what makes you a man. You know, I feel like the mistakes you make are always going to be mistakes, and it's what you learn from those mistakes and not being fearful of speaking up on those mistakes that you made, you know, that's going to make you a better human being down the road, you know, for your children. Because being oblivious is only going to take you so long, you know, ahead. You know, and,
I tell people now
is the perfect time to do it. You know, now it is. Now with everything going on in the world with the virus and people losing their jobs and everybody being broke and stuff like that, you shouldn't feel no way about the status that you are in this country right now at all. Not whatsoever. You should not be sad that your rent's late, because some of us had to take jobs less than what our previous job was to even have a dollar, you know. So that should be the one less thing mental wise that you should be afraid or upset about. The time now is to make your mind rich.
I love that. Yes.
You know, because I tell people, I might not have two pennies to rub together right now, but I want to make sure that the one thing that I can do better on is my mental. And that's really the only thing you can work on and control is making that more richer. Because it's going to make you more richer around everything else. It's going to allow you to focus on the things that you need to focus on. And it's going to allow you to focus on your family, being a better lover. You know, I told my wife the other day, I said, at the end of the day, I said, the least I can do for you, the least I can do is be a better partner for
you. Wow, that's beautiful.
You know, so, you know, and I know you had mentioned something about, you know, Monday about what happened. And it was, you know, when I did it took me a long time to actually watch that video. A lot of people were posting it, but I didn't want to just see another black person killed by the cops. And, you know, when I do speak on my podcast, it always is not that I've ever been stopped and had a bad experience with a cop. I've yet to experience that. Even when I feel like I should be in those situations, you know, every situation is going to be different. The way I speak and the way I come off. And I always tell people, oh, it's my glasses and my light complexion that gets me by, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm hurting and I'm angry and I'm frustrated and upset, not because I've had that experience or been racially mm-hmm. profiled at jobs, you know, I felt. But as far as what's happening in this country, when somebody else that looks like me is hurting, I'm hurting as well, too, you know. When I see a dad on the TV crying because his son or daughter was killed, that's those are my kids too, you know, and that's how we all should, as black people, carry each other. Instead of saying what should have happened and what they should have done differently, yeah, all those things could have happened, but would you have those same responses in that particular situation as well too?
None of Probably us will not. Know what we would do until we in it, and we don't want to be in it. Yeah,
exactly. You know, so when people say, oh, well, you just had those conversations because, you know, no, I'm having these conversations because it's my people out here hurting. You know, I'm pretty sure when, you know, they were fighting for civil rights and protesting and rallying at a time where they were getting killed because they were just black. They weren't doing it because of they knew me or they knew my family. They did it because they wanted all of us to be equal, you know? And that's how I carry myself. I carry myself as though those are my people out there getting shot and killed by police officers who are trained to not kill us. You know, that's what we're told. That's what we think. But that's not the unfortunately, that's the harsh reality. That's not the case
for us. They are trained to protect and serve other people. But for us, they're trained to just react. And normally in a violent way, you know, so that's always a hard pill to swallow. But then I recognize, like, you know, just the history of this country, I think it's been so much more important to recognize, like, this country was not set up for us to win. When they said, you know, all men are created equal, they never intended it to be. Any person of color, I'm talking about brown, I'm talking about Hispanic, black, Asian, none of that. But if you're one of them other cultures, they're more likely to align with you versus the people who you brought here, you know, against their will. And that's so unfortunate. And because of that, we are allowed to be outraged, and we are allowed to join with our outraged brothers and sisters, and we're allowed to mourn with them, even if it doesn't apply to us. And I think that's the problem with America, is because I don't care what color you are, whether you're white, black, brown, yellow, whatever. If someone is dying in the street, you should be sad for that. You shouldn't be looking for what that person did wrong. We should just be sad because it's a human being who didn't have to die that did die. And you had all colors come together in the civil rights movement, because it wouldn't have went anywhere if it was just black people doing it. And we have to be honest to say that. It's a lot of white advocates and Hispanic advocates and Asian advocates that's got our back. You know, Native American people got our back. But it's so overwhelming to show them hating us than supporting us. We think they're all our enemy. And that's a disservice we do to ourselves as black people. Not every person that's not black hates us. But we do have to be mindful.
Because it's a lot of us that hate each other. You know, so... It and I actually had a couple guests who, like, one gentleman who's a white guy. I think he's like episode 8, and we talked about you know, white privilege, and he moved from New Jersey here, and when he saw the landscape and getting thrown into, you know, a community where it's a bunch of different people, not just black people, it helped him decide what he wanted to do. And that was advocate for, you know, the voices of the people that are unheard. And I think that's so huge. Like, if you look at any point of history, if it was you know, with the Underground Railroad, they needed white people to have those roots across that road that, or they wouldn't be free slaves. And those people were shot and killed for helping black people, you know? So I totally agree with you that yes, we need, and every minority has been, you know, ridiculed and hated in this country since they landed here, you know? So to see so much of people siding with, you know, people who are racist and having a president who is that, that does put, it does hurt my soul, you know, when it comes to that. You know, to see this white guy protest at many rallies that were in Philadelphia for black people, it warms my heart because I know that all of them aren't racist, and a lot of them, you know, do care about just, it's not even about being black, white, yellow, purple. Yeah. It's about being an American, and it's human life,
like, to understand that we all are supposed to be equal, that is nothing different, and just the circumstances we are. Like, for me, my boyfriend, he's white, but his children are black. His son is black, he adopted him, and his daughter is biracial. So he goes around like, I have black kids, I'm worried for my son. You know, he doesn't let his son drive anywhere by himself, you know, because he's like, I need to protect my son. You know, he's 21 years old and very sheltered life because he knows what this world would do to his black kids. Yeah. So he always acknowledges his privilege every time we're all together. He teaches his kids their heritage. So you have people who are our advocates, that we can't shun them and say this is our movement, because we're also, like you said, hurting and killing ourselves too. And even though they're two different issues, they do both affect the black man's mental health. That you could be hurt by the person, just jealous, your jealous neighbor, worried about you got more than them, that's the same color as you, and then you have to worry about the system that's set up for you to fail. So I think, I don't know, was it your page or someone else who posted like two guns at a black man's head? And it was like one, I'm not going to say the words, but one was with the ER and one with the A, but they both said, we hate you. So I seen that post today and it's just like, we have to love each other first, figure out how to self-police and maintain our own communities. But then also really align with people who are fighting for us for justice and do those things too. And in the meantime, take good care of our mental health, first and foremost, to deal with this reality. Every single day we wake up, we can't change the color of our skin. We can't change where we live, not overnight. You know, we can plan and save and do that, but not overnight. We can't change where we live. We can't change what family we're born in, definitely. But we can change how we think, and we can change how we behave, and we can change our attitude towards everyone. So that's what I think.
Everything, like you were saying earlier in our conversation, everything starts with us. We have to be the one to, I don't know if it's, I know that definitely the next generation, like, you know, every male, every woman that I've talked to, I just know that the next generation is going to be the generation that's going to change the way. And that's why we just have to protect them, because we're setting the bar. And everyone that, like I said to you, everyone, every single being entity that I've talked to has all been on the same page about changing their mental health, changing, you know, the views that they dump on their children. And I just know that when they get older, they're not going to have the same. I can only hope.
I think we need to keep that hope. I have that same hope, like the next generation.
Yeah.
And I think it's our job in this in-between generation, do what you're doing, do what I'm doing, do what so many other people who are doing, is just giving them a firm foundation to stand on so they can come and take over and recreate these systems. And I really think it is our children that's going to do it. But it's us getting our healing and getting our lives together so our kids can have a firm foundation to do those things is key.
Correct. And I think it's going to be just the interactions I have with my kids now. I know that it's other parents that are having these same type of interactions and connections and conversations that are different than just telling the kid to shut up or, you know, you're not allowed to know these things, or, you know, I'm like you saying, I'm very transparent because, you know, my kids need to know that everything ain't always rosy. Like, you have these things because this is how my life was, you know, not to be like a bad thing, but they need to know that there's still kids out here. Like, I always tell my kids, and even when we go and we drive to places and we go to gas stations and stuff, and I always tell them, do you know why that kid's over there got to pump gas? Do you know why they have to do these things? Because they don't have parents like you. So when you say things that don't need to be said, you need to, you know, be grateful that you don't have to worry about how you're going to eat tonight or how your brother's going to eat tonight or, you know, having electricity or clean clothes. You don't have those type of struggles, you know? So be grateful that you don't have those and focus on the things that you do have, that you can, you know, 100%, you know, just focus on those in school. Focus on school because you have you have no other burdens, you know? And I think that's key for kids. And I'm assuming that's how white people kids are. They don't have the same struggles that we have or that we have to think about. We all had to grow up very young. I know I had to grow up very young, you know. Then what happens is we want to be kids at 30.
Oh, yeah, speak on that. Yes. I think there's a lot of black women and black men is out here being kids because they wasn't able to be kids. But the problem is they're having kids while being kids themselves. And that's how the cycle continues. I think with things like you're doing, and so many of my tribe, they are intentional in their parenting. Like you said, like you're communicating, you're giving them like structure, you're giving them discipline, you're giving them awareness. You're providing their basic needs so they don't have to worry about simple things and they can just focus on their achievements, you know, emotional achievement, also educational. Because I make a big deal to tell parents not to be so hard on their kids, even like now with this virtual learning. It's crazy. It's causing everybody mental health issues.
I got over it. I just make sure you turn your stuff in. I'll go and look, but listen, I can't beat y'all.
Yes, they, like, y'all in the house 24/7. This is hard for them.
24/7.
Yeah, so
very hard for them. Like, I have introvert kids, but I know.
Yes.
They don't want to be in there.
And so I told parents all the time, you know, don't be hard on yourselves, because some people are like, oh, I'm not good for this. Well, unless you're a teacher, you're not going to be built for this. But also, you and your kids ain't never been in the house so much together. You know, and they used to being with their friends and socializing and recess, and all of that has changed. So you have to promote good mental health in your children too, by not being so hard on them, because this is all new for them too. So as we working on our mental health, we also need to establish and promote good mental health for the kids, because if they don't get stuff done, I'm like, you know, you got to do it if you want, you know, XYZ, whatever incentive it is. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to, like, stress for you to have perfect grades or grades like you had before, because it's a whole different world now.
Correct. When this first started, I said to myself, I was like, I would never thought that in my years of living on this earth that I would have to go through a pandemic. You know, there's been like viruses and Ebola and SARS and, you know, swine flu and all that, but nothing to where it's like killing over, you know, 280 or 290,000 people, you know. It's like you never know when who's coming in your house, what they got, and you're scared to cough at work.
Yes.
You know? So, but I'm gonna ask you, you know, I'm leaving one last question, and then, you know,
okay,
I'm gonna let you enjoy the rest of your day. So my last question for you would be, why do you feel like Black women are more, more reluctant to protect Black men than Black men are over Black women?
That's an interesting question, because I don't actually feel that's true. I feel that a lot of family, it starts with the breakdown of the family in the nuclear system within the African-American community, where you have most people raised by single parents, mostly the mom. Sometimes it's single dad, but mostly single mom raised these kids. The mom's work, or if you stuck in that welfare cycle, depending on the system, either way, the kids are not getting attention that they need. So the daughters grow up to be very independent, mother-like figures in the household. And the sons normally have time to just run and do whatever. So what happens is these girls grow up very mature and ready to settle down and have their own family, because they feel like they've been playing house pretty much their whole life. And the boys never really had consequences, because most times their dads were not in the house or very inconsistent. So they now emulate that. And this cycle continues to go on and on, to the Black woman just feels abandoned by the Black man. You know, and then when they feel frustrated, because when you do have one who's been hurt by so many other Black men, then you got a tough cookie to crack, right? You have a lot to go through, and a Black man has to really love her, really be patient with her, really decide to be intentional about the way you interact with her, because she has been hurt. Starting with her father, maybe starting with her grandfather, maybe starting with her uncle, then just the system itself, then being told by her mom that she has to do grown chores and handle the household when mom's at work or doing whatever, but then still to stay in a child's place. So you're giving our kids mixed messages. Then they grow up to be adults, confused about what roles each one supposed to play. And I think that we do each other a disservice by holding by the standards of what we grew up, instead of creating a new norm. Roles don't have to be fluid. It's not man stay at home, woman clean up the house anymore. It's two people working hard to make sure the ends meet, to make sure the house is run okay, make sure the kids are safe and whole and happy and healthy. And that's what it should be about. And I think we, as a society, needs to change that for the Black family. Because I think if the Black family grows more intact, then we will stop having so many problems within our community. You know, especially I think that has a huge part of like the violence in our community. Because everybody's angry. Everybody's sad. No one values their own life. So they don't value the person that they're shooting or killing's life. You know, so that would be the way I would end it. I don't think that we have given up on you guys. And I don't think that they don't want to support. I just think they're so hurt and they're so tired and they just want someone to fight for them and to love them completely and give them a chance to just be a woman and not all the other hats that most women have to carry. Most Black men, women have to carry on a daily basis.
And it's crazy because everything that you just said, I agree with you 100%. And I was waiting for you to say what was going to say earlier, but I was like, I'm going to wait for Ms. Lakia to see if she's going to say it. But I feel like the 400 plus deaths that's been in our community has a lot to do with what's going on right now. With the virus, everybody being so close knit in the house all day, every day, you see a rise in like domestic violence, parents killing their kids or themselves or their spouse, and nobody, going to get healthy help for it, with how they feel. And, like you were saying about roles, like, we talked about, growing up young, and I was the oldest of, it was me and I had two sisters, and I had to raise them a lot due to my mom's, bad habit. And, so I grew up and wanted to start a family young and be married at a certain age. And that was just what my mind was tuned to, the beat it was tuned to play. It's not like, hey, Julian, I know I messed up your life, but you should get some help so that you don't, we're not having those type of talks with our kids, and we're having them grow up young, very young and have to be more than what they should be at such a young and put so much pressure on them. Eventually they're going to crack,
Definitely.
Wow. So, I usually do at the end of my show. I usually do like a callback. Just something I took from my guests. I usually take that, and I tell you what. Since I started this whole thing, it's been so much insight and positivity and newfound brotherhoods I've gotten just from having just a single conversation with somebody. To where I feel indebted to check on their mental health. I feel indebted to make sure that they are safe. I feel like it's been able to help me be more humane, especially for my people, because I never was, so. But the biggest thing that I took from is just making new traditions, breaking those curses, because if we're doing the same traditions, that's only going to bring the same hurt that we felt, So starting new transitions, transitions.
Yes.
With our family. And being more transparent with our partners. Because I was like that earlier in my marriage. Why is my wife nagging me? Why is she always wanting my time? And then when she wasn't feeling that shit no more, I was at the point where I wanted her, but she done already showed me that side of her. But I was so stuck in my feelings and what I was going through that I couldn't, tell her. So a natural reaction is somebody who just got married to somebody, they got married because they loved that person. So for me not to show them the type of love that they thought that they weren't ever going to feel and they don't get it, then it's like a slap in the face. So I feel like through my journey, it has helped me just slow down a little bit and not react off the bat, like, be on go when a woman says something to me, because I don't want to hear
exactly
what they say.
That's perfect. That's growth. That's growth right there.
Wow. I I appreciate you really jumping on today, giving me over an hour of your time.
Oh,
today.
You're so welcome. I'm amazed too, because I've grown and I learned a lot about you, and just more about you than I even knew through social media. So I'm impressed. I'm so impressed, and I wish you all the best with this, and I hope it continues to grow and it catch light and catch fire and put fire behind other men to be accountable for their families. And their partners, because I think it will change the world if Black men knew the kings that they are and how much power they had to shift and change their environment, and how we as Black women will be so in back of them, pushing them along. We just need some leaders. We need our leadership. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that you're taking this role. I'm thankful that you're taking the lead and just continue to grow and prosper in this.
Yeah, and one last thing. I think what changed my mind and made me want to start this, I went to a corner store around the corner from my house, and I had all the kids with me, and we walked into the store, and I was like, where's my other son at? And he comes in, and this lady walks in, and she says, sir, whatever your kids want, I want to buy it for them. And I said, you don't have to do that, man. She's like, no, I need to do it. I want to do it. So they got like water ice and stuff. So we were getting ready to leave. I had the baby carriage, and I said, and I was getting ready to leave, and she stopped me. She's like, I just wanted to let you know that your kids are, they have, their manners are so, your son held the door for me. You know, kids aren't out here, aren't doing that. Their parents aren't holding them responsible and accountable for their actions. I can clearly see that is what you do in your household. Please keep up the good work, King. We need more kings like you, setting a bar and just being, you know. And after that, I was like, okay, this is what I need to do. Like, I have to do this, you know? So it was just, I don't know if it was God telling me and just giving me breadcrumbs on what I need to do, but I feel like that was the pivot point in just changing my mindset and being able to not only keep it in-house, but let other people know, especially, you know, other people, yes, other colors, exactly, that we're all not animals. You know?
Perfect.
So, you know, please keep up, you know, your work as well, because like you said, social media only gives you a fraction of what really is, because it's all be fabricated, you know. But I learned so much of you just through, you know, your recent, you know, transparency. You know, I already know that you're already a transparent person. But letting the world know that, I feel like that's huge on other people saying that it's okay to say these type of words, and I'm not going to, you know, you know, somebody's not going to come at me with a pitchfork or anything. And just please keep up your work with just our people and our, especially our men, and wrap them with your arms and just give them the tools necessary.
I'm gonna do my part. I promise you that. Until the wheels fall off.
Yes.
Yes.
That's all we can do. So, Miss Lucky, one last thing. To all my viewers, I always say one last thing. I sound like Trump. Please, Tuesday is a very huge day. If you haven't already early voted or mail-in voted, please, 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 you know, go out and vote. This is not, I didn't start voting until Obama became president. And I voted, I mean, there's only been two elections after that, but this will be the third election. And it is so huge that we go out and we represent, you know, we have to. If you're not voting for Biden, whoever you're voting for, whatever case may be, you're entitled to that. But you not voting is
amen
not
to help, that.
You know, so please vote. Yes. And please wear your mask. That's huge as well. But, you know, I think this will be it for another episode of Melanin Dads. Miss Lakia, you please take care of yourself.
Thank you. And, God bless.
Keep being the queen that you are for all of us.
Right.